Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Hardwood Knox. Today we have a guest with us, Alec Nathan from Bleacher Report's Breaking News team. How you doing, Alec?
I'm good. I'm ready to watch Ben Simmons get drafted by everyone's favorite team tonight.
Yeah,
years of suffering are over.
I should mention, Alec is a diehard Sixers fan. We were just talking before we came on that he was trying to condition himself to be okay with Brandon Ingram because that tortured fan base was just convinced they weren't getting the top pick. But now you're pretty stoked, right?
I'm over the moon. I was a little skeptical of the jump shot like everyone, but I think based on everything I've read, and I mean, we have to remember this kid's 19. Like, he's going to develop tools that he didn't show at LSU, that he didn't frankly need to show, and they need playmakers more than anything, and he is certainly that.
Yeah, I think his jump shot's going to be fine, and everything else is, like, exceptional. So
I hope that Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons turn into, like, these megastars. Ditto for Nerlens Noel, just so that Sam Hinkie can be vindicated, and he'll probably be, like, the GM of the Spurs at some point.
The Sam Hinkie vindication is something I want, too. That's Dan Favalli, by the way, folks. I was a little delayed on his introduction, but you know him already. Today we're going to be talking, it is draft day, but the draft will be, it'll come and go here in the next few hours. So we're going to focus mostly on trades that have already happened leading up to the draft, as well as the potential for more moves throughout the offseason. So first off, I wanted to kind of just throw around the trades that happened yesterday. I guess the biggest news, and we can talk about this, but it's not the biggest news from a on-court production standpoint. But certainly the biggest news from a name standpoint is the Derrick Rose deal.
Vomiting.
Yeah, I was going to start with you, Dan, because, of course, you are the resident Knicks lifer, and you have Derrick Rose. So what do you think?
So when I first saw the trade on Twitter, I got really excited because I was like, KP at the five. More cap space in 2017. So I even think I tweeted, like, this is good, but I'm going to miss Rolo. And then, like, 30 seconds later, I was like, what the hell is wrong with me? I don't know what the Knicks were. I know you know what they're thinking, but they're hedging too much on cap space again. Jose Calderon, worthless. If you want to argue that Jaren Grant, a first-round pick, isn't going to be anything more than a backup after 1 year because he didn't play well or at all in a system that doesn't suit him, fine. But Robin Lopez was worth a pick of some sort. And I get why you're moving him, because you want cap space, but now you're just hedging on the fact that the Knicks are going to be able to sign free agents. And this isn't, to me, this isn't about Derrick Rose even a little bit. Like, oh, great, if he returns to all-star form, that means the Knicks are going to give him a max deal in 2017. That's the last thing you should want. So the Knicks are essentially saying that Robin Lopez and Jaren Grant are not worth them not being able to chase Russell Westbrook or Stephen Curry or Chris Paul in 2017. And I don't necessarily agree with that, because you're probably not going to sign any of those guys. And Robin Lopez, above anyone else, is really, really good.
I do like, you brought it up at the start, I do like the fact that it could mean, like, permanent Melo at the four, Kristaps at the five, at least for this season. So I guess it makes sense from that perspective, but I also agree with you on Rose. Like, even if he gets back to near all-star level, what's the shelf life you can expect on that? I mean,
well, I just don't want to pay him. And the other thing is, I would probably feel a little bit better about this trade if I didn't already see the names that the Knicks are supposed to chase in free agency this year that would effectively move Kristaps back to the four.
Yeah.
Keep me the hell away from Joakim Noah. I do not want to give Pau Gasol $15 million a year for the next 2 years. If you sign Dwight Howard, which I don't think Phil Jackson ever would, but if you sign Dwight Howard, you're contending for a title circa 2010. So it just doesn't, like, why isn't Al Horford's name being dropped? You're not going to get him, but at least say you're chasing him, because he would make sense. So this has more to do with my very little faith in the Knicks franchise to make the right decision. But if it means KP at the five and Melo at the four, yes, you can at least justify it that way.
So here was my main question, because when I saw it, I was laughing. I was like, wow, the Knicks would trade for Derrick Rose. Like, this is the most Knicks move ever, to chase something that's not out there. But then I thought about it, and I thought, well, what kind of foundation do they have in place and what kind of assets do they have? And I know they just traded a bunch of those assets, but
they're only two.
Right. Well, they don't have a lot. I mean, they don't have a first this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a first next year.
Yep.
Right. But they are pretty depleted in the asset department. So what I was thinking was, well, this isn't going to be your conventional team building strategy. So maybe this is, this is admittedly a shortcut, but maybe they have to take sort of these alternate routes because they can't sort of sit back and develop players because they just don't have the assets to do that right now. But I mean, tell me if I'm way off.
Again, they don't, and their timeline with Melo, I get it, but this should have been a trade where you got more. Like, there are just, in my head, and I probably can't name any of them, but there are probably just so many better trades out there. If you partner Grant and Robin Lopez, and if you needed Calderon to, like, do something with salary, like, would Lopez and Grant have gotten the Knicks like Drew Holiday? Maybe would have made more sense. So I think Robin Lopez, his deal in the new salary cap, based what he does on defense, he improved as a passer on offense. Like, Derrick Rose is like, what are you trading for? And I know people were wondering who were the Knicks bidding against because they gave up like way too much for him. But you had to match the salary, otherwise you don't get to use your cap space this year. Like, absorbing Rose into salary cap would have arguably have been worse. And I also don't think it's a coincidence that this deal, as it lies, happened right after Derek Williams and Aaron Aflalo opted out, because you could have used one of them perhaps to help match that salary instead of Rolo. And I honestly believe that the Bulls weren't looking to get anything of value for Rose. They just lucked into talking with the Knicks.
Yeah, it does seem like they were just unloading, which actually leads in pretty well to another question that I had. And we may not have to spend a ton of time on this, but is it weird to either one of you or disappointing that so many people still think that Derrick Rose was like the best player traded yesterday?
It's not weird. It's sad. Like, it's just it's name recognition. Like, Derrick Rose isn't like Derrick Rose. Like, I don't. Like, where does he fit in today's NBA, especially on the Knicks roster? Like, you better surround him with as many shooters as hell. Like, he can't shoot, so he can't play off the ball. And now you have to jostle his touches with Melo and KPs. Like, where does he fit in today's NBA? Like, where does he fit?
His shooting is among the very worst in the entire league.
And yeah, I have to say,
that's the best. That, I mean, that's the most important skill in the game. Go ahead, Alec.
Yeah, watching him, I mean, I used to love Rose. I loved his old attacking style, but when I watch him ever since these injuries, everything he does seems to be predicated on trying to fill up these pull-up jumpers, and it's just like, it's unbearable to watch, because not only is his form, like, I mean, it's pretty
broken.
It almost
looks,
I think,
painful.
Yeah, I actually think Dan broke this down like 2 years ago in a piece. He, like, there were screenshots, and you could see like how crooked his elbow was, and I was looking at that, and I was like, like, you could see this guy was taking like 20-30% of his shots from three, and like, they're just not good shots for him. Like, at least try and work like Westbrook pull-up jumpers or something.
It makes sense, like, in theory, because you don't want him necessarily, you want him attacking, but like, one, he can't do what he used to do,
right?
And two, I don't even know, this probably isn't a proven fact, but you don't want him doing it as much for fear of him getting injured more. But he's not making these shots, and we're in, What are we really in of the reconstruction of Derrick Rose? Is it year like, three? Is it year
well,
four?
Well, I think the first injury happened in 2011, right?
Yeah, it did. It happened in that playoff series.
So
like, no, that was 2012.
Yeah, it was,
okay,
I think
so
it was 2012.
Years.
It was 2012.
And, well, he didn't play 2012, 2013. So, like I'm saying, see, and then he got injured again in 2013, 2014.
Yeah, it's just been a mess ever since then.
And right,
I,
and
that sucks
that's
for
not
him,
fair
but,
to him, but
yeah.
But now, like, the past 2 years, he's played most of the games, has he not? Like, we're in at least year two of the full reconstruction of Derrick Rose, and it's just not, he's just not, as he is today, he's not fit to play in the league.
At least not the role that he, yeah.
Right.
I knew what you were saying. What do you guys think about this deal from the Bulls side? I think they obviously won the trade, right?
Killed it. I mean, fleeced them.
Yeah. What,
like, Robin Lopez is going to make less than both Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah get. Like, and he's under contract for
yeah.
three more years.
I think he's clearly better than Noah right now, I think, just based on Noah's injury history the last couple of years. And
Jaren Grant may never be more than a backup, but I think, like, he'll drive and pass, so you can do that. Calderon is, like, he's whatever, but you can make Robin Lopez down the line, if the Bulls decide to rebuild, you can make him part of a bigger deal that a team will want. Like, that contract is going to be gold.
I also like that it finally ends this, what was already a pointless debate between Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler. Like, unless they go ahead and move Butler, which I think some people think is a possibility, but now it is officially, what's that?
Team Bobby Portis.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he'll get some more time too. But I just think it kind of clears the air for the Bulls. I think Lopez helps them too. Any other thoughts on their side of the deal?
They won. They got value for a player that they never should have gotten value for. That contract, even though it's expiring, it's just still not good because it takes up so much of your spending power.
Yeah, I'm with you. So let's move on to the other trade that happened yesterday, and this is the one that I think is a bigger deal from a basketball sense. That may be my pro Utah Jazz bias speaking, but Utah picks up George Hill from the Pacers. The Pacers pick up Jeff Teague from the Hawks, and the Hawks get the number 12 pick from the Jazz. I think this is a runaway victory for Utah, and I can explain why, but I want to hear what you guys think.
I'll defer to Alec first.
I had two initial reactions when I saw the trade. One, I love it for Utah because Hill is an immediate upgrade for them at a position of need. I mean, maybe this ends Trey Burke's time. That would be lovely.
That was already over. There was no way he was coming back next year.
But I think what people don't realize, like, George Hill is a tremendous defender. I think his wingspan is 6'9", 6'10". And so, I mean, Utah was already trending positionless, and they can switch near everything, if not everything. George Hill also shot better than 40% from three last year. He's a good shooter, like, better than people give him credit for, at least off the catch. I mean, he's not going to be a playmaker, like, creating off the bounce. But, I mean, he's really nice for them. And my second thing was, I was so ecstatic to see Teague land with not the Sixers. Because that rumored trade was so... Oh, it was a gut punch. Like, I tried talking myself into it the second I saw it. I was like, well, you know, they need a point guard, but Nerlens is far more valuable than a rental. And even, I mean, I know the Pacers are talking about signing Teague to an extension, but do the Sixers really want that? No. So
Teague is another guy whose name value far outweighs his actual basketball value. Based on the stuff that I saw from responders on Twitter and everything yesterday, the Hawks were like 7 or 8 points per 100 possessions worse when he was on the floor last year. What are the Pacers doing? I guess they want to play faster. Is that really the only angle here?
And not play defense?
Yeah, I was about to say they don't want to play defense.
There are worse defenders at the point guard position, don't get me wrong, but I think so much of the Pacers' defensive success last year was you had George Hill to cover up for Monta Ellis. Jeff Teague ain't covering up for Monta Ellis. So, like, now all of a sudden you place a bigger burden on Paul George, who will probably have to defend point guards on some nights. So it's just... I didn't understand it from Indy's perspective. Like, and it just makes absolutely no sense.
It makes no sense to me either. I guess Larry Bird's been talking about playing faster for the last couple of years, and I think you can maybe justify it from that perspective, and maybe you want to say that it's just time to shake things up. We've gone as far as we can with this group, but just in a vacuum, I don't think there's any way you can argue that Jeff Teague is a better basketball player than George Hill.
So here's my main question. I think the Hawks are obviously moving to Schroeder. Assuming Horford re-signs, what direction is this team going in right now? I mean, maybe they get a decent rotation guy at number 12. But Bazemore could be out. I mean... And it just, I don't know, there's something there. It feels like there's a disconnect.
They're
I just
in
don't
like
see
a
them.
Weird so, purgatory right now.
That's what I was going to say. They feel like the Pacers are below purgatory right now, I think. Like they're, they're
so
in
hell?
A sub-purgatory. They're in sub-purgatory based on yesterday's move. But I mean, the Hawks are just kind of like lingering. I don't know. I mean, granted, they have
you.
Splitter coming
so,
back, right?
Yeah,
but
so
that doesn't
I think
really move the needle for me. Go ahead, Dan.
So for the Hawks, I think now, so if they were going to, because Bazemore is going to get a big deal, and they only have his early bird rights, so they had to use their cap space on him. And if you factored in Horford's hold, the Hawks literally had to cut salary like crazy just so they could afford Bazemore and Horford to keep them. Now there's a scenario where I think they'll have like 24 or 26 million with Horford's cap hold. So you can, if you cut that, most of it will probably go to Bazemore. Let's say it's 15. So if you can pick up a guy for like between 10 and 12, all of a sudden, I think that changes. Like, you know, maybe you're fine with Dennis Schroeder at point guard. And if you can add that other guy, maybe it helps. You could look to move Kyle Korver to open up even more and try and get another splashy name. But you're right that they're stuck. And if Bazemore leaves and they re-sign Al Horford, I think it's even worse because it's like, where is this team going? Its front court is amazing, but it's old. And then you just have Dennis Schroeder. Like, Kyle Korver is 50, and Dennis Schroeder is like, he's the point guard. I'm not even sure if he's a full-time starting point guard, but if he is, is he a full-time starting point guard for a playoff team?
I hope this doesn't take us on too big of a tangent, but is there anyone but the Sixers in the Eastern Conference who's like, okay, I'm gonna say the Sixers and the Cavs, who aren't really stuck.
I like where this is going a lot.
Because the Sixers, I can look at the Sixers and see Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and think, okay, they're moving in a certain direction. The Cavaliers are obviously the Cavaliers. What is the rest of the Eastern Conference?
The Celtics aren't stuck.
The Celtics aren't stuck. And I also, this might be unfair, but I tend to think the Heat are never stuck as long as Pat Riley is calling the shots. Because
that's probably
true. I mean, like, granted, Wade is on his last legs. Dang is a free agent. Whiteside is a free. I mean, they're in flux, but I never doubt Pat Riley ever.
They're like, I don't know. It's all going to come crashing down a year or two on them. I think it helps that they all of a sudden have these guys in Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, and Tyler Johnson who are young and good, which will help. But I think you could argue that they're stuck unless they have to like win free agency. Yeah. So I get Bailey's point there, but for the Hawks, it seems a little bit pricey to me to tread water. At the same time, if you lose Horford in free agency for nothing, that's a fail. Like, you might as well just re-sign him because you know you can move him at the trade deadline or in a year or something.
Are they almost at a point where they got to blow it up?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, Millsap has a player option next season. I mean, granted, it's a big one. It's $21.5 million, but say he wants one last long. Right, everyone's going to opt out, and he'll be 32. He'll want one more long-term deal. I mean, if Horford for some reason doesn't come back, like, they have to seriously think about trading Millsap at the trade deadline this year, no?
I would say even beforehand, get that Brooklyn pick from Boston, unless Horford goes to Boston, in which case that won't work. But I would agree with you. I think Millsap's phenomenal, but the
decision
is going
to be hard
curious
to bring him back, like to convince him to come back if things fall apart this summer.
Right. My guess is he'll stay because they're going to offer him, my guess would be, more money. But on the Hawks' part, like, I'm still, and maybe Bailey doesn't feel the same way because this is where they are now, but I still think the Jazz, like, effed up when they didn't get anything for Jefferson or Millsap and they just let them both go. Like, I'm not a fan of doing
it. Yeah. Like, it turned out okay, but I definitely see the argument for
you
have to
sit on, like, at least two more firsts, which isn't a bad situation to be in.
Which is,
I'm generally of the opinion that you should at least get some sort of return value, even if it's pennies on the dollar at that point. You have, like, if a guy's going to walk, you have to get something. Exactly. Yeah.
So, but especially now, like, to lose, like, Al Horford, who is, like, one of the most versatile big men in the game. I think it's him and then DeMarcus Cousins are like the most versatile centers in the game, probably. Oh, KAT too. But to lose him for nothing would sting. But if you keep him, but I guess you could argue, even if they maintain the status quo, is there a chance Schroeder is a bit of an upgrade over Jeff Teague? He doesn't shoot as well, but it's like Bailey said, they were worse with Teague on the court.
I think the argument for Schroeder is, one, he's younger. Two, they're better defensively when he's on the floor. And they were actually better offensively, too, when he was on the floor. But I have a hard time trusting him offensively. He makes a lot of, like...
questionable decisions.
Yeah, questionable decisions. He seems to get ahead of himself a lot of times. And maybe that's just youth, and maybe that's something that he'll kind of grow through as he becomes the starter. But I think it's not a slam dunk to me with him.
Does it make them worse, though, is my question.
Like, I don't think it makes them worse.
Stay together. So then maybe that's like, hey, we got a number 12 pick to stay where we are.
Yeah.
Like, that could end up being what it is at the end of the day.
What about this deal from the Jazz side? I obviously love it. They've been one of the worst teams in the NBA from the point guard position, just in like a raw production standpoint, for 3 or 4 years now. And Alec, I think it was Alec, brought up earlier that Hill's maybe not the best playmaker, which actually might make him a better fit in Utah than mm-hmm. some other point guards, because they've got point forwards like Gordon Hayward, Rodney Hood showed that he can run the pick and roll. And so there's going to be a lot of offensive sets where George Hill can just kind of be a floor spacer on the wing or in the corner. And he's going to help him defensively. He's versatile. He can play multiple positions just like their other guards, Burks and Exum and even Mack. They talked about being able to play him at the two, even though they didn't do it last year. I love it. I really can't see anything to complain about it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it was an obvious win. And I think Hill, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think Hill might be kind of like the prototype for what you hope Exum becomes. I mean, in terms of like utilizing his length.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can have like two defenders of that caliber who can switch that often and just like disrupt that many positions, I think that's a huge win.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of times where those two are on the floor together. You know, some people have asked the question, what does this do for Exum's development? I don't think it hurts it at all, especially with him coming back from a torn ACL. It gives him kind of a soft landing on the return. I love it. And he's on an expiring contract, which some people have said that's a problem for Utah. Why would you give up a number 12 pick for an expiring contract? But it sounds to me like, from what Hill's agent has said, that he'd be interested in coming back. And if Exum's development suddenly hits warp speed this season, then you just let him go and it's fine and you proceed with Exum.
Or you get rid of Alec Burks.
That could be coming down the pipeline. Because there's a lot of guys in that backcourt now.
Right. The other thing that is a little bit weird, and I don't think you move forward with, you know, obviously Trey Burke is gone, but I don't think you move forward with Burks, Exum, and Hill. Hill's going to be a free agent. Gobert is going to need his money. Hayward's going to opt out. That's going to be a very expensive summer for the Jazz. And then the year after that, assuming they don't make any moves, you know, Favors will be a free agent in 2018. Dante Exum will be extension eligible. And at that point, I think you'll have to – Hood will be extension eligible too. So
that's the issue with – like these – everybody's been really high on Utah's rebuilding process for the last couple of years and how many good young players they have. But eventually, you got to pay everybody. When the cupboard's full, you have to start paying players. One thing they've talked about doing to kind of hedge against that is sort of, I think it was either last summer or two summers ago, what the Nuggets did with Wilson Chandler, where they extended him before his contract was up. They're talking about doing that with Favors to maybe try to maintain some of that flexibility. Yeah. But yeah, like, there's a ton of names coming up. Go ahead, Dennis. Sorry, cut you off.
No, that's about it. And I would think at this point, I know George Hill, is he pushing 30? How old is he? He's 28, 29?
I almost said 31, but somebody might want to look that up. Yeah.
So he's George, 30. Yeah. So I get that Burks is like half a decade his senior, but I just like what Hill does so much better than Burks. Like, is, in a nutshell, like, is Hill not clearly the better player right now? And would you rather get the next 3 years of Hill or the next 3 years of Alec Burks? Just down the pipeline, I'm saying, in terms of he's going to be a free agent. I'm not sure you keep both Burks and Hill. So, and Hill would probably make comparable money. Like, I'm not sure he gets more than $11 or $12 million next year.
The other thing with Burks, and I like him about as much as anybody. But he's had a really hard time staying on the court the last couple of years. And when he has played, he's been like the one Jazz player who can't seem to fully buy into the Quinn Snyder basketball, where it's like constant ball movement, constant player movement. He's still the one guy who will catch the ball, stop on a wing, and isolate for 10 or 15 seconds. So he just might not be a great basketball fit either. So I think I'm with you on that, Dan.
So that'll be interesting. But I think the Jazz won this year. And if they're healthy, you got to look at them as like probably a top five or six Western Conference team. Their four best lineups, their four most used lineups last year, most used, had a net rating equivalent to ranking third in the NBA. All of them. Their four
health,
most used.
Injuries killed them this year.
Right. So, I mean, with Hills, they're better.
Yeah, like, I agree.
He's a seamless fit. I'm interested to see, what does this do to Shelvin Mack? Like, is he a part of the plan at all anymore?
Yeah, like, now they have... I think we can reasonably say Trey Burke is gone. Like, he was already gone before this deal happened. But that still leaves them with George Hill, Dante Exum, Shelvin Mack, and Raul Neto, who exceeded a lot of people's expectations last year. So they definitely have things to sort out. Even though you can reasonably say that Exum and Hill can play a little two as well, there still seems like there's another move or two coming.
Do you think... and we should probably move off the Jazz eventually, but do you think that they're going to consider trading Derek Favors at all? This isn't even necessarily about, yes, Trey Lyles is so much better than anyone expected, because I hated that pick. But also, like, too. You could get by with Hayward at the four. Hood could probably play at the four a little bit. And that seems like, you know, that's not necessarily Quinn Snyder basketball, but that seems to fit better, especially if you don't have to sacrifice anything defensively. That seems to fit better in today's league.
I think you could argue that Derek Favors is the best all-around player on the Jazz, but for the last year or two, I've been on board with this idea that he might be the most movable of this group, and that helps with the flexibility thing we were talking about earlier. It could help them play a more modern sort of offense. When Gobert and Favors were on the floor together last year, Utah was really good. But just looking down the road, I still feel like a Lyles Gobert front court makes a little more sense in a modern NBA.
Right.
And I think you can get good value for Favors too. So I think that's something that they should very much be on.
Would you trade him for the third pick as a part of that package? Like, Favors as a center in Boston.
I like that a lot, really actually. Well. That's so the stupid Gordon Hayward rumors that came out, I think it was yesterday, and that's all they were.
Yeah,
there's more today, too. The Suns tried to give them Bledsoe for
Gordon
Hayward.
There was some stuff yesterday, too. But the Gordon Hayward for number three doesn't make as much sense to me, because I think Hayward has more value to the Jazz than he does around the league. Favors for number three actually does intrigue me. And I think it's for some of the reasons you already stated. I think Favors really works well in Boston. And it's not a guy that I don't think it breaks Utah's back if he leaves. And number three is good value. Even though I don't really love this draft after the top two, I still think that's pretty solid value.
Like, well, I'll go ahead, Alec.
I was just going to ask, if you got number three, who's your ideal fit for the Jazz there? Because, I mean...
Dragan Bender and Rudy Gobert front court. Let's go.
But you want to take...
I don't know if I would take a big guy there. Because
Jamal Murray, for sure, right?
I think I would go Murray. Murray's been my clear number three for months.
Yeah, I guess Hield would be a little redundant with Hood already there.
And I think... So, no. Yeah, I agree. I think a Murray-Hield comparison, too. I take Murray every time because he's a freshman and did basically what Hield did as a senior. So Murray was always the no-brainer at number three, especially that since Utah already has Lyles and Gobert, I'm not sure Bender makes a ton of sense for them there. And shooting, like I said earlier, that's skill number one in the NBA right now, and it generally translates. So I think Murray's going to be really good.
I know a lot of people are kind of like high key low on him. They don't think that he's going to be like good. I see his skill set and I just think it fits.
Yeah. I tend to agree. People seem to be down on Murray because he's not like an above the rim athlete, but like, I think he could play both guard positions. He's been very vocal that he's been a point guard his whole life and that he wants to handle the ball more. So, I mean, we already know what he can do off the ball. He averaged the most points on that Kentucky team, and he shot, I mean, what, better than 40% from three?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, he has everything. I mean, I would love him
the weird
on the
thing
Sixers
about
to get selfish for a minute. But
the weird thing about the Murray criticisms to me is it's a lot of the same people who love Devin Booker right now, who was, I think we might be at a point where Devin Booker is almost overrated. He shot 34% from three as a rookie, yeah. And people are in love with this guy. I don't understand what makes him so much better than Jamal Murray, maybe an inch or two taller.
I think there's that. And could you argue necessarily, I guess, that Devin Booker probably has the higher defensive ceiling? Like, Murray's never going to guard small forwards. Booker could probably guard three positions.
Right?
Yeah. I guess that's fair. But go ahead.
So would you essentially go, so let's say it's the number three pick, and then you just match salary? Like I don't know anything else out of Boston.
It'd have to be like a mirror just to match salary. Yeah, that's exactly what I was
thinking. But you do it, is what I'm saying.
I probably would.
I kind of like that for both sides, even though, just because I feel like Jamal Murray could end up being a really good fit in Boston, but he seems a little bit redundant with Avery Bradley already there. But yeah, the way the Celtics play, like, Murray could end up being their power forward at some point. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah, you never know with Brad Stevens. I like it too. Favors, he's not as good at center as he is at power forward. And maybe that's just a system thing. I think Brad Stevens can make it work. I think that would be a good deal.
Jared Sullinger worked at center last year.
Exactly. Yeah.
At center.
Clear upgrade.
So since that's kind of in the books, I know Andy had tweeted out something last night. Respond to this tweet with the most realistic trade ideas for your favorite team.
I tried to put that caveat in there. I don't know if it worked.
Here's the ridiculous ones. Okay. Jarrett Jack for a first round pick.
Whew.
This one was weird. Danny Green for the number six pick. And then Steve Kyler of Basketball Insiders said this. I think Danny Green, he's referencing Danny Green, is worth more than the five. I know this draft is shallow, but could we be like, for a second?
That seems a little hyperbolic. I mean, he's on a great deal. He's making $10 million a year for the next 3 years, so that's a bargain.
He disappeared offensively.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did he shoot from three last year? Like, mid-30s, low 30s?
It was a huge slump. It was so uncharacteristic.
He shot 33.2% from three.
Boy, that's worse than I thought.
Granted, that's after four straight seasons of shooting better than 41, but like...
Yeah, that's got to be an outlier, but that's still weird.
Yeah,
I mean, he shot 51.1% in the playoffs, so there's that.
Maybe it came back, yeah.
I'm just, come on, the number five pick for Danny Green.
Yeah, straight up for Danny Green is, yeah.
Well, and especially because who's drafting five, Minnesota doesn't have a contending timeline to even use Danny Green appropriately.
Wait,
I mean.
I'm sorry, Minnesota probably does that deal. Tom Thibodeau was probably like, yeah, we should do that. Could you imagine going from being like, hey, we want the number five to Jimmy Butler for, hey, we'll take Danny Green. the other one, and I don't know, Dave Leonardis, a friend of the Hardwood Knocks podcast, this seems a little steep, but he said Ashik, Tyreek Evans, and number six for Greg Monroe. I know that Ashik's deal is bad, but like, I can't watch Greg Monroe.
I'm in the same boat, and I think we touched on this before, but I wouldn't touch Monroe in that deal because he has one guaranteed year left.
That's what I
and
was
even
say.
Even if he exercised his player, I mean, even if he opted in, which no one is going to do when the cap goes up to like 108, 110, whatever it is, I just don't like that rental, especially for a New Orleans team that, like, again, contending timeline, doesn't really match up with Monroe's prime.
Right. If you could somehow get rid of Ashik without giving up the number six pick, I don't care who you give up aside from give up Holiday is like to grease the wheels. I don't care, but I wouldn't do that trade because of Greg Monroe. Like I'm just like it's not even his contract. Like he's a defensive disaster. And the Pelicans are bad enough defensively even with Davis as it is. And I don't want to discredit what he does because it can be sometimes fun to watch him score in the post, but not really. And he's a pretty good passer, but you need to put him on a team like the Celtics, or I thought the Bucks would work, but they clearly didn't have enough perimeter defense. Like he needs to be somewhere where you just have like lockdown. This is a hypothetical scenario, Bailey, but like you could put Greg Monroe on the Jazz and a team like that could survive. They should not. Yeah. I'm just saying like that's
yeah,
the type
I'm with
of
you.
This one's interesting and I just saw it now. The Celtics trade number 16, 23, 31, and RJ Hunter to the Kings for number 8.
What is
did you guys just see this Mark Stein flurry for breaking news?
No.
Oh no. What did he do?
He said Philadelphia is ramping up its efforts to acquire number 3, most likely involving Nerlens Noel.
My trade article is going to go to man.
So that is fascinating. I was going to say New Orleans would be a great landing spot for Noel because they could really use an actual rim protector next to Davis. But I mean, oh, I have so many thoughts.
I'm sorry. It sucks for I wouldn't is Dunn worth. I think there's probably a better deal out there. I don't know. I give up.
I don't know though. I mean, the only guy I could see. I mean, I really like Bledsoe. The knee surgeries concern me. But I mean, if we consider Dunn, like Dunn reminds me of Bledsoe to a degree. I mean, they're very similar.
He probably better fits your timeline. I mean, like.
Oh, he definitely fits the timeline better. I mean, but he is still one of those guys. I mean, he was a 4-year player.
Right. And again, so him and Bledsoe are kind of, well, they're not that close in age. Isn't Dunn 23? What is he?
Bledsoe's probably like 26 now.
He is 26, yeah.
What if the Sixers took Jamal Murray with that third pick?
I think their love of Dunn is so well documented. I think Bucher reported like 2 months ago. They were like, listen, if like they're gonna take Simmons, but like they love Dunn, and then it's been everywhere. It's been hard for them to hide. I mean, what do you do with Okafor if this happens? I mean, you just build a second unit around him.
I feel like they need to move.
I thought they need to move
heaven and earth to get him off the roster.
I agree. I mean, I think you have to bring him off the bench and build a second unit around him, honestly, because
like an Enes Kanter type of a thing.
You could play Embiid at the 5 and then let Simmons play the 4 and share playmaking responsibilities with Dunn if that's going to be the case. I don't think you can afford to muck up your spacing with Okafor, Simmons, Embiid, and there's not enough there.
That could be.
But at least if you bring him off the bench, you can afford him the space to work and give him the time to get those possessions. Because
is Saric Lord knows he's sure too.
It's not a sure thing.
Okay.
It depends which source you consult. I mean,
that certainly makes things interesting too, because he's a 3-4 as well.
Yeah, he's a 3-4. That's very interesting. I mean, it's a good get for Boston, honestly. You also have to, I mean, you have to think Philadelphia gives up something else now.
I don't know.
Yeah. If the Celtics get Covington and Noel, I think you could argue if they get Covington too,
I'm going to be a little miffed.
Well, you're not going to have any shooting. That's why. But...
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, then your best swingman is Jeremy Grant. Granted, he's a good defender. He can defend 1 through 4, but he's not a shooter by any means.
Then you got to hope that Ben Simmons shot comes around sooner than everybody.
Well, I mean, granted, they do have.
They don't need to make the playoffs this year or anything either. So,
I mean, they're also $60 million below the projected cap floor. So it's not like they can't go out and spend.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Right. It seems like I really like Noel, but with him going towards restricted free agency and you're going to get that cost-controlled asset at number three, Noel Covington kind of makes the most sense.
Yeah, but, I mean, that is true. Noel is about to be restricted.
So,
if they don't want to pay him.
Right.
I think I like that deal for both sides.
Yeah, it's listen, I like Dunn a lot.
Yeah, so. I think
right.
it works.
I'm just hoping it doesn't go through until like tonight.
for your
own
sake.
I think Dunn gets drafted by the Celtics, but they draft him. I mean, and then we find out, you know, a minute later they drafted him for the Sixers.
That's fine.
I don't think this happens beforehand.
All right, so there's that. Thank you, Alex, for monitoring that.
Yeah, keep an eye on it.
Someone actually wrote that in Andy's mentions, but I think this exact
trade
was like Chad Ford's idea, right? Like, wasn't Covington and Noel?
He had Covington, Noel, and Covington and Noel for like number three and like RJ Hunter, I want to say.
I think that helps. Yeah. I kind of like Hunter. I don't know why, but. Like, I've been irrationally high on him since before he was drafted.
You're also irrationally high on Jimmer, so I think that's first.
Well, no, that is rational.
Can also snag. What if they can get your boy Terry Rozier out of that, too?
I love Terry Rozier.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Now, that's one that I don't get.
Shut up, Bailey.
All right, next hypothetical.
Yeah.
This one's kind of interesting. We just talked about it. Celtics trade number three in Jarebko for Favors. Would you prefer Jarebko to Amir Johnson? They're both non-guaranteed.
Yeah, somebody. I actually did see that one yesterday. That's one of the ones I saw, and that's interesting to me for a lot of the same reasons we already talked about. Does Boston have cap space this summer? Like, could they absorb?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure they would want to. Like, I think they would still want to be players. So I'm not sure they would want to take that $7 million difference hit. But it would have to be done in the off season after the draft. But it would work. And I think Jarebko works on the Jazz.
Yeah, like, same here. I think he's a good second unit, like floor spacer from the four.
We have another Celtics one. Celtics send 3 and 16. To Nuggets for picks number 7, 19, and Yosef Nurkic.
I guess if Nurkic is like what he was as a rookie, that's
he was just injured right. last year.
I think that's probably true.
What do you think, Alec?
Read those picks off to me again.
It was three and sixteen.
3 and 16 for 7, 19, and Nurkic.
I wouldn't do that if I was Boston. I think the drop-off from 3 to 7 is, like, considerable. I mean, granted, you could also... I like Murray and Dunn a lot more. Boston, but and I know some people are saying that sort of third tier separates. It's or is kind of, like, up to the... You know, it's very subjective. But I have very high opinions of those two guys. So I would rather that than settle for, you know, Marquise Chris or... Jaylen Brown, who I'm not particularly high on.
I think he's going to be a problem in a bad way.
Jaylen
Brown. Go ahead.
Speeding through this to the next one, unless you guys have anything else to add, I'm actually giggling at it.
Hayward, in a good way? Or?
No, I'm giggling like I hate it for both teams way.
Okay.
Gordon Hayward for Devin Booker and the number 4 pick.
Dude, that's one that I don't know if you saw my timeline this morning. That's one I actually responded to. It's terrible for both sides.
Like,
I don't like that for anyone.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Boston's third pick. So all these are just going to involve Boston. Boston's third pick for Paul Millsap, which again wouldn't be able to be done until the Celtics carved out cap space over the summer. I mean, you could throw out Amir too. You could do Amir probably number 3 for Millsap.
I mean. I think there'd have to be more coming from Boston, frankly.
Which is bizarre, right?
Like, it is because I'm saying, like, if Millsap, if we agree Millsap might be gone after next year anyway because he has the opt out, I mean, then it's a good hedge by Atlanta because you are getting number 3, but, and they, I mean, they could use wing help.
To me, it's just if Atlanta picks a direction, this trade is either really good or bad. If they want to compete, then yes, trading Millsap is dumb, but if they're actually rebuilding, You're not going to get a top three pick for a 31-year-old like ever again.
That's pretty much where I'm at.
This one will probably make Alec want to puke. Trey Burke and the Warriors' 2017 pick for Philly's 26th pick this year.
Trey Burke and what was this? The Warriors'
2000. So it's going to be the 30th pick.
You're essentially saying these picks canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just getting Burke for free, basically.
Yeah.
Do it.
No, don't do it.
I mean, listen, I would, I like a lot of the guys at the end of the first round just in terms of, like, you know, supplementary role players. Like, I like DeAndre Bembry a lot, whether he's there in that at 24. I like Demetrius Jackson pending this Dunn move. I like Patrick McCaw. Like, I'd rather have all those guys than Trey Burke, frankly. Just because they're more unknown quantities. I know what Trey Burke is, and I know I don't like him.
Yeah.
So.
That's fair.
Here's anything else to add to it?
No, I just said do it. I said take it and run.
Here's this fake trade, which is completely illegal because two of the players are going to be restricted free agents. But a sign-in trade, they said, Harrison Barnes, Festus Ezeli, Ian Clark, who's also going to be a free agent, for Dirk Nowitzki. It financially is impossible unless you're going to match.
Well, that's what I was going to say. How are you going to match salaries on that?
If this was the middle of the season, though, and Dallas was like, screw it, let's do an about face, I could see, like, it would make some semblance of sense. Like, oh, hey, we have the rights to Barnes and Ezeli, and let's put Dirk on a contender. But, like, now it's just impossible. Here's another one, and I'm surprised that another person suggested this. Fareed and one of the Nuggets' later picks to Minnesota for number 5 and Shabazz. The top 5 pick for Fareed is just – is it not so much?
I know. Is Fareed name recognition again?
Maybe, and I think also, like, people – he is a pretty good rebounder. He would probably be fun on the break, and his contract isn't terrible. Did Bailey leave?
No.
So what do you think of that one, Bailey?
You're going to have to read it to me again.
Fareed and, let's say, number 15 for the Timberwolves, for number 5 and Shabazz. That's a coup.
I was going to say, I love it for the Nuggets.
Someone said number 5 and Levine for Butler, but I think the Wolves overpay there, personally.
Levine and
You
really think that's an overpay?
Yeah, I was about to ask the same thing.
I don't think so at all.
I don't know. I don't particularly like Butler next to Wiggins and Rubio and Towns.
I think if you can get a talent, I think my general point of view there is if you can get a talent like Butler on a team-friendly deal like that, then you have for that cheap of a price, I would take that shot.
I think I would do it too. I really like Zach LaVine, I guess. And I think just Butler takes away touches from Towns and Wiggins probably. But again, I guess it's not terrible, but I wouldn't do it. Ross, this is a Raptors one. It makes no sense when I read it, but it'll make sense when we talk about it. Terrence Ross, Bruno Caboclo, number 9 and number 24 for Marvin Williams, who is a free agent.
Yeah.
Or Dudley, or did they mean Jared Dudley?
Dudley is also a free agent.
Yeah, but why would you trade?
Why would you trade 9 alone for? I mean, I love Jared Dudley, I really do.
The last name, and I read these out of order, is Danilo Gallinari, and that's where it starts to make a little bit sense. I would, if I'm the Raptors, maybe you don't trade number 24 in that, but I would trade for Gallo.
But why would Denver do that?
Bruno Caboclo is the Brazilian kept. And he's only...
How many years away is he now?
He is now one. Oh, no, is he just two away?
Well, I guess he's 1 year away from being 1 year away. Nailed it.
Okay.
That was great moments in draft history. I'm very much looking forward to Fran Fraschilla talking about international guys tonight.
I want to hear the one Hernan Gomez take.
Yeah. Oh, God, this is awful. Picks 3 number three, number 16, Marcus Smart, Jerebko for Butler. Oh, wait, that's actually not bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, what?
When I first read it, I thought it said for Butler and Gordon Hayward, but it says that. So there's that or picks number 3, 16, and Jay Crowder for Gordon Hayward. I love Gordon Hayward. I hate that deal for the Celtics.
The Jimmy Butler one makes more sense.
It does, because he's under contract, and you could just try and sign Gordon Hayward next year.
Yeah.
I think that's about it on the good ones.
A good rundown. I'm glad you could moderate that for me.
I think my favorite one was Danny Green for number 5 or number 6.
Mark it down.
But since we're finished, that means it's time for
bacon. Bacon. Where's the bacon? I smell bacon. 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 Gotta be bacon. Only one thing smells like bacon. That's bacon.
Yes, it is Burns My Bacon time. Today we have Andy, who's all fired up, so we're gonna give the talking stick to him.
Yeah. So my bacon is burning over just sort of the general thoughts and feelings of the average NBA fan towards statistics. It's very, very strange to me. If you post like a basic statistic, like true shooting percentage or something like that on Twitter, the instant reaction from like half the people who see it is you don't watch basketball games. I've had a bunch of people the last couple of days be like, oh, I'm so sick of these analytics guys, all these nerds who couldn't actually play the game in real life and are just trying to like horn in on it this other way. It's sort of the Charles Barkley take. First of all, I am not an analytics guy. I'm not that smart. there are tons of writers who are better with statistics, with actual advanced stats. The stuff that I post is super basic, super easy. Secondly, this idea that analytics guys think that numbers replace watching basketball is so dumb to me. And also this idea that analytics guys think that numbers replace talent is ridiculous. And the takes that I get from the people who are just so anti-stats are like the last couple of weeks of my mentions have been a sobering reminder of the failure of American education, in my opinion. it's like we talked about earlier. There's these players who are categorically, objectively awful now that people still like are pounding the drum for. It just makes no sense. It's driving me crazy. I had one guy yesterday who was calling me a nerd and stuff, and I challenged him to a game on one-on-one. I still don't know where he lives. Hopefully he'll...
Temecula, maybe?
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Hopefully he'll get back to me on that. I do think that he would be surprised to show up and face a 6'7", 250-pound guy in basketball, but maybe he's that size too. But anyway, what do you guys... What's your take on the whole anti-statistics movement?
I mean, numbers are stupid.
I love numbers. I use them I've always used them as a way to just confirm what I'm seeing. Like,
exactly.
I don't usually go in and just say, oh, look at this guy, you know, must be good because of the numbers. I'm like, this is what this guy does, and here are the numbers to prove that.
Yeah.
It's all worked together. There shouldn't be.
There isn't one side or the other. Exactly.
And that's the thing that bugs me, because people don't realize that it just helps you understand the game better.
Yep.
You know, I disagree, because I think I'm one of the guys, I don't watch games. I just use the numbers. We're in this post-apocalyptic bunker. Wow. And I just have my calculator and my numbers and my websites. I haven't watched basketball since like 2003.
That's what one guy said to somebody who was responding to me, and then somebody responded to him, said, oh, did you come up with that in the bathroom with your calculator? And I was like, oh, is that like the common place to come up with stats? Very strange.
Yeah, I mean, you could go on either of your Twitter feeds any night of the regular season and see you guys watching like the most random regular season game,
yeah,
right?
It's like
I mean,
all
you
I
could
do.
Be watching You could be watching, yeah, you could be watching like Suns Blazers at 1 a.m. tweeting through it, and people be like, "Oh, but you like numbers." Well, no, I'm spending my time watching this.
I told one guy my wife would certainly appreciate if I watched fewer games. Like, it's pretty obvious throughout the year that that's what we do. We sit at home and we watch basketball games.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's actually scary how ignorant or stubborn people still are.
Yeah, that's been my thought the last few days. It's like you're just willfully being stupid. It's really weird.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Yep. But that will do it for us. We are all going to go take the rest of the day off to play with our calculators.
I'm going to watch Chris Dunn highlights.
No watching allowed, Alec.
Celtics fans will be watching Nerlens Noel highlights.
Yeah.
That'll do it for us, though. If you want to get at us on Twitter, you can follow Alec Nathan. He is at Alec B. Nathan, spelled like it sounds. You can find Andy Bailey at Andrew D. Bailey, also spelled like it sounds. You can find Adam Frommel at Frommel09. That's Frommal09. We missed him today, but not really. And you can find me at Dan Favale. That's Favale. Finally, you can find all of us, minus Alec, at the Hardwood Knox Twitter handle.
Minus all of us, really.
Yeah, minus all of us. We promise to start using that before the year 2025. That's our resolution. But until next time, everyone.
Shout out Bino Udrih.